comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you may be, wherever you may be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it is the show where you matter. Today, here in the United States of America, is a very special day. It is an official holiday. And we call it Memorial Day. The purpose of Memorial Day is for us to pause, to remember, to thank, and to honor those who have died in service to our country. And I want to start tonight's show off by saying a very sincere and very heartfelt thank you. You know, these are some incredible men and women. Think about it. They put on the uniforms. They took the oath. They stood on the front lines. And they died for people they didn't even know so that those folks could be free. And, you know, all of those many, 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 many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands who have died in service to our country didn't even know me, and yet they made the sacrifice so that I could be free, so that I could sit here at this microphone night after night and say the things that I say, talk about the things that are interesting and important to me and to you. They made that possible. There are countries where this would be illegal. And to even try to do what I do here would wind the host in jail. But and maybe worse. There are such countries, but not here. And not here because of these wonderful, wonderful people. So my very sincere and heartfelt thanks and gratitude to them. And let me say, although we have a day for honoring those who are now serving, let me also say on this day that my very sincere and heartfelt gratitude also goes to those who are right now out on the front lines of danger in behalf of freedom for the rest of us. Don't forget, if you haven't yet subscribed to the K-Files, be sure you do. The K-Files is our free weekly newsletter. It is free. That's the operative word. It is free. And no strings attached, no tricks. It's just free. And all you have to do in order to subscribe is just go to my website, which is kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see where it says K-Files. Just click on that, and in a matter of seconds, you can subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we don't ever give out our email list to anybody. We don't rent it out or sell it or anything like that. So you won't be spammed as a result of subscribing. We'll be back with my guest, L.A. Marzulli, right after this. and welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is L.A. Marzulli. He's the author of something I know you've heard of. It's called The Nephilim Trilogy. The Nephilim Trilogy it made the CBA bestsellers list, and it continues to be a hot seller. And it's been a decade or more since it first came out. Mr. Marzulli is also the author of a nonfiction work called Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And his latest book is called The Alien Interviews, which features 17 personal, intense interviews with people who have been directly involved with the UFO phenomenon. This is his first time to be with us, and I must say that I am absolutely delighted to welcome L.A. Marzulli to the Kevin Smith Show. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on, Kevin. Pleasure to be here, sir.
Wow, I had your volume turned way up. Let me turn it down to something
okay.
A little bit. My fault. I had it way up. Okay. But we're delighted to have you. You know, Lynn, I've been, over the days since we scheduled this, I've taken a look at your website. I've read some of your blogs. You have a pretty interesting combination of things that you write about. Certainly, you don't write entirely about UFOs and aliens, but that's part of it. And I was impressed with the... what can I say? The depth of thought that goes into these articles that I read in the blogs.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And you seem to have quite a following as well, which of course you would expect if you just take into account the fact that the Nephilim Trilogy was a bestseller and is still a hot seller after a decade. Let me ask you this, let me introduce the audience to this, those who haven't yet been to your site. You write a lot about the interplay, or the intersections, I guess we could say, between UFO phenomena and things that are in the Bible. Now, let me rephrase that. You don't write a lot about that if we just take that at face value. What you do, though, is you don't shy away from that. That's my impression. You don't shy away from it. You talk about it. And you have some, I think, some amazing explanations for some of this. What is your point with the alien interviews? What is it that you're trying to get to the reader's mind?
Well, basically, let me just give your readers an idea. There are Dr. Jacobs, Dr. Roger Lear, Dr. Jesse Marcel, retired Major George Filer, Dr. Lynn Katai, and Dr. Wanger. These are all highly educated men and women, obviously with PhDs, and they come in a very in-depth interview process. It was all written, so there's nothing taken out of context. There's no editorializing. This is me asking a question in written form, and these people replying back their answers in written form. So what they said stays. It's not cut. It's not edited, and I don't editorialize on it. And what's interesting, those are the PhDs that come on. Then we've got other people that are just observers or contactees or abductees, whatever. They weigh in. So the book is basically 17 people that have either experienced it up close, like Dr. Roger Lear, who's actually taken and operated on different people, about 17 to 18 people now, I believe, and taken out so-called implants from people. He's had some really bizarre stuff happen. For instance, there was an implant under a woman's arm, and as his finger got close to the implant, you could actually see the implant move underneath this woman's skin. And they removed it. What he's come to learn is that when you take these out, you put it in a vial of the person's own blood, and then it seems like it'll still give off radio waves. I mean, it's high strangeness. It's absolutely bizarre. The whole purpose of the book is to show people, basically the skeptic. It was really written for the skeptic. I was on a show which I won't name, and no matter what I threw at the host, he discounted everything. And this got sort of, it's like if you just want to argue and just create a polemic for the sake of doing it, that's fine. But if we're actually looking for answers and truth and trying to look at the phenomenology here and provide answers to it, then this method isn't going to work of just refuting everything and calling it swamp gas, weather balloons, or a flight of a flock of geese or something. The purpose of the alien interviews is to give it to the skeptic and say, look, here are five PhDs which come on the record, and all these other people that come in on the record. These people are not crazy. They're experiencing something. What are we looking at? What paradigm best suits it? Is it a deception? Are they really extraterrestrials from other galaxies? Or are they, in fact, interdimensional beings? At the very end of the book, I weigh in, and I don't editorialize on what people have written. I just give my own personal opinion as to what the phenomena is, what's behind it, where it's headed, and some of the things to look out for. So it really is written for the skeptic, and it's a mixed bag. People are from all different worldviews. Dr. Roger Lear and I and Dr. Jacobs, the three of us, we could sit down and agree on some points, but certainly not all points. So from all these interviews came this saying, while we may agree to disagree on some of on the phenomena, we can agree that UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away. And that's the purpose of the book, is to give it to the skeptic and say, look, folks, something manifests in our skies on a routine basis, almost daily, somewhere on the planet, and does so with impunity. They manifest wherever, and including restricted airspace over nuclear sites, airports. I mean, you name it, they're there, and it's been on film. And recorded by, at this point, tens of thousands, perhaps even hundreds of thousands of witnesses have encountered something. So, again, the phenomenon is real, burgeoning, not going away. What is it? What are we looking at? Are they friendly ET from, Zeta Reticuli, or is it something more sinister?
You know, it's pretty interesting the different ways that this phenomena is handled around the world. And let me say, before I bring this up, and I want to get your thoughts on this, I have a set of theorems, if you will, and one of them is that the world is not like where you're standing. The only place that's like where you're standing is where you're standing. Okay? Now, in China,
it's obvious but very true. It's really good.
Yeah, well, in China, when there's a UFO sighting and they've got good video of it, it makes the news. It makes and they don't laugh about it. They don't, they just say people saw this. The Air Force said they don't know what it is. And here's the date and the time. This is what people saw. Now, the reason I know that is because I watch CCTV from China, okay? And I see them report it without the giggle factor. Now, here, there are a few journalists that are beginning to report such things without the giggle factor, but in majority, they still have this little smirk on their face.
Uh-huh.
And, they report it with some kind of giggle in their voice and even bring up the stupid, stupid phrase over and over, little green men.
I was going to say exactly that, little green men.
They invented the little green men, and then they throw it back as if we invented it. That's completely something made up by the press. But it isn't handled by idiots all over the world, just in the United States. And in other countries, there are other countries that have idiots for reporters and controlled news media. But in other countries, there are other countries where this is taken seriously. So here's what I want to get your reaction to and just see what you think about this. Is it possible that this idiotic approach to reporting on UFOs here in the United States is something imposed on these reporters, or are they really as stupid as they appear to be?
I would say, from my research, and I was I had a tour guide basically take me through a local Los Angeles, a fairly large local Los Angeles television news studio. I won't name it. And in one of the guide pulled me into a sort of an archive where all the videos from even the Kennedy assassination, RFK, were kept. And this person told me that the news media makes you afraid to leave your house and makes you afraid not to leave your house. It'll make you afraid to start your car or not start your car. It'll make you afraid to change your tires or not change your tires, or drink this beverage or not drink this beverage. It exists, and this person said it exists basically to promulgate fear and spread fear, which is really what it does. And that being said, I believe that and you call it the giggle factor, which is, I'll start using that. That's a great term. They all do it all across the board, all across the country. They'll break a story, and it's all tongue-in-cheek, and they kind of goof on it, and they laugh at it, and it's always ridicule, like, oh, this is just so far-fetched. And there's another phrase that I've adapted. It's called vicious ignorance. In other words, not only is you've got the giggle factor, but you've got vicious ignorance, where people have never spent 5 minutes looking into the phenomena or the overwhelming amount of physical evidence that we have regarding the phenomena. And yet, ridicule, laugh, roll the eyeballs. And this is deliberate. It's like it's almost a form of propaganda to keep people distracted from what is really happening. And I'll just give you one example. There's a guy that came in on the Alien Interview book, and he talks about cattle mutilations up in his neck of the woods. And cattle mutilations have been going on for decades all over the West, and certainly as far north as Montana, everywhere. And it's ongoing. It's not stopping. And now it's gotten into sheep, and it's become really destructive, to where sometimes the calves are taken and they're stripped almost completely clean of flesh, surgically done. It's what one UFO researcher calls it destructive. There has never yet been, Kevin, in decades of these reported incidents, not one person brought to justice, no charges brought against anyone, no perpetrators ever found. Now, if it was one or two of these things every 10 years, I'd dismiss it. But it's ongoing, it's real, burgeoning, not going away, and the news media doesn't cover the cattle mutilations. And there's another aspect to it which is even more unnerving, and that's the human mutilation, where exactly the same type of stuff, the same type of grisly, gruesome physical destruction that happens in the cattle mutilation is now happening to human beings. And this is the one topic you don't talk about in MUFON circles, in the exopolitic movement. No one wants to hear about it. And as a friend of mine, Butch Wachowski, I've had him on my show, and we did several hours talking about a case that he's working on, human mutilation in Pennsylvania. Now, the whole thing was completely covered up, not only by the media, but by local law enforcement, to the point where the family, here's the thumbnail sketch, guy goes out, he's about to go hunting, tells his wife he'll be back in 2 hours, hops on an ATV, and 3 hours later, it's not back, 4 hours later, the wife gets concerned, she calls the cops. The cops come, they do a local search, can't find the guy, search and rescue come out, they find the ATV on top of a hill about 5 miles away from the house. No sign of a struggle. Nothing looks amiss. The ATV is just off. Further investigation finds one of his boots at the top, on top of a tree, about 75 yards away from the ATV, on top of a tree, one boot. They find it. They call search, you know, search and rescue there. Cadaverdars come in. They stage this thing. They're looking for anything, no clues. 36 hours into the investigation, next to the house, and by the way, the pond, which was also next to the house, they sent divers into the pond to look in case he had fallen in and drowned or whatever, foul play. Nobody in the pond. And the pond is fairly close to the house. Their staging area is right near the pond and the house. They've gone by this. There's hundreds of people there. Again, cadaver dogs. 36 hours into this thing, in a thicket near the pond, is a white object. Upon further scrutiny, they discover the body of this man drained of blood with two pierce marks, one above his chest and one above at his temple, and his hands are, like, clenched in front of him, jaw wide open, like he's screaming in absolute terror. The family was later told in an autopsy that the man died from a cocaine overdose. The body was shipped back to the family in a welded metal casket, so you couldn't open it. Welded metal casket and interned without the family ever seeing the body. Cover up, anyone? So my friend Butch Wykowski is on this thing trying to find more information.
Now, when was this supposed to have taken place?
When?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's several years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly recent.
So the last 4 or 5 years or so?
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's the theory?
Well, I mean, this gets into some pretty dark, weird stuff. It gets into, and there are parallels between what is happening here and the whole ritualistic blood sacrifice that goes way back into primitive cultures, Aztec, Mayan, Sumerians. It goes back all through antiquity, ritual temple sacrifice, where humans were sacrificed and the blood was used to so-called appease the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think it actually lends itself into, except that a couple of things. The blood is obviously drained and whatever, but it's used in some sort of, I believe, ritualistic way by these entities. It's also, there's a text that says the life is in the blood. So in other words, if I were to say, Kevin, where do you reside? Where Kevin Smith is alive and awake and walking around on the planet, you're not your brain. We know that. There's no observer in the brain. So where does the essence of Kevin Smith reside? And ancient texts will tell us, biblical texts will tell us that the life is in the blood.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, L.A. Marzulli. Lynn, when we went away for break, we were talking about this case. Where did you say this took place, this possible human mutilation?
This was in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, okay.
That's correct.
Now, I had asked you, you know, what the theory was, and you said, well, it may be tied in with all of the this thing about, you know, the blood sacrifices in the ancient civilizations. Okay, so that brings up a question. The blood sacrifices in these ancient civilizations were to appease not just the gods, but generally a specific god. They had different sacrifices, different dates, and there was a specific god that was being appeased. So the question is this. In the UFO community, or the UFO, the world of UFO enthusiasts at large, there is a theory, and not everyone subscribes to it, but a great many do, that the ancient gods are not mythology, but were very real and were extraterrestrials. Now, let's assume that that theory is correct. If that is correct, do these so-called gods, do they need blood? Is that the deal? Is it an actual need for blood for some reason?
Before I answer that, let me say this. I don't have all the answers, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody on the planet has all the answers. I have some. Mm-hmm. Some of them are theory. I believe, first of all, that these so-called gods that came down in antiquity, specifically, let's say, the Greek gods and the mythos that's associated with them, I believe that this can be traced to what's called the Book of Enoch, which is a pseudepigraphical book found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, widely read throughout the centuries, not part of the biblical canon, but there are certain similarities in the Book of Enoch and in the Genesis 6 account of the fallen angels coming down and cohabiting, in other words, having sex with the daughters of men, and resulting in this hybrid Nephilim. And we know from the Book of Enoch that one of the attributes was cannibalism. Especially towards the end, before the thing really got out of hand, they would drink the blood of human beings. That's the kind of stuff that was going on, according to the Book of Enoch. We also know that blood opens up portals. In other words, when you're creating a blood sacrifice like this, you're opening up a demonic portal. You're allowing these entities, you're giving them power and substance to move from what I call the second heaven to the first heaven. In other words, they're able to manifest. If you'll notice that people that will talk about ghosts and hauntings and all this stuff, you'll often find some sort of blood, whether it's ritualistic blood or murder or a tragic accident in that area, which if you just do a little bit of background, you'll see, like, for instance, one of those, and you'll see, like, the ghost of a, what appears to be a ghost of a Civil War veteran in a uniform. What you're looking at, in my opinion, is real, but it's these demonic entities mirroring what the blood sacrifice spilled in that location allows them to manifest. And this is what they do. They're always the end game for them is deception. Jacques Vallée calls them in his book messengers of deception, talking about UFOs. I just take it one step further, and I say, yeah, they're messengers of deception, but what they are fallen angels. What people don't realize is there's been this cosmic war, which is actually the title of the book I'm working on. It's called The Cosmic Chess Match. There's been this war in this other dimension, which has been going on literally for millennia, and it's spilling over into our dimension now, but at some point, I believe in the near future, it'll really spill over into this dimension, full on, full blown. We will see supernatural stuff like we've never seen before on this planet, and people won't have a clue as to how to deal with it or how to embrace it, not to embrace it, reject it, you know, whatever. It'll be overwhelming when the thing starts to really manifest. We're seeing some of that manifest now. The exopolitic crowd is embracing the phenomena as something that's benevolent, that they are our progenitors, so-called aliens, are our progenitors. They manipulated DNA thousands of years ago, created modern Homo sapiens as we know them. The DNA was manipulated, and also they created the world's religions to try to bring us into some sort of spiritual upliftment, whatever. They started the civilizations of the world, all over the world. They were worshipped by our ancestors as gods mistakenly. Now they are back at this critical juncture in human history to usher us into a new age, a paradigm of hope and peace and love and all this stuff. And in my opinion, it's 100% deception. And remember, I'm saying this a priori. I'm saying this before they manifest. I'm calling it for what it is, that I believe it's the coming great deception. It's not what people think it is. It's not what Steve Greer and the exopolitic crowd, who so gleefully are all ready for full disclosure and to embrace these entities to stop the war on the planet. Look, I want to stop the war on the planet, too. Give me a break. I wrote about that today. Or yesterday in my blog. But the bottom line is these entities, I believe, are very highly malevolent, nefarious, evil they operate in ways that human beings, first of all, are not equipped to deal with them, because they are beings that are capable of doing things that human beings can't even travel in. For instance, they can communicate telepathically with a person. We hear this over and over and over again from people who are allegedly abducted, that they never speak verbally. It's always communication mentally, telepathically. They also can put images in your mind. They can create entire realities where you're sitting in a room, but you think you're somewhere else, looking at someone else, looking at a dead relative, talking to your, you know, deceased father or son or wife or whatever. They're capable of doing this thing. They're capable of messing with your mind so much that they can create different realities. I thought a great take on this was the movie, and Steven Spielberg was the head director of this, Taken, which is, I think, 20 hours, one of the longest and expensive miniseries ever produced for television, and yet not aired on a major network. Go figure. It was aired on the Sci-Fi Channel. They show it every year. They haven't shown it this year, which is sort of interesting. Usually they show it right around this time, so it's overdue. But I'm sure in the summer they'll rerun it again, or they'll run it again. And in that, it shows these so-called extraterrestrials are manipulating images in people's minds. So they think they're seeing things, and of course they're not. So the other thing that they do is that they lie. They lie habitually, and many the abductees that I've talked to have said this. People coming out of it, they realize that they lie incessantly. And of course, in order to, you know, lying is, and people who try to argue this, well, they're just above our notion of good and evil. No. Lying is a deliberate obfuscation and twisting of something which is true. I mean, it's in order to lie, you've got to know what the truth is and then either obfuscate it, twist it, malign it, redirect it, leave something out for your own purposes. So the fact that they engage in this tells me that these are not friendly Zeta Reticulans from the, you know, wherever they are from, you know, the Zeta Reticula star system, allegedly.
Okay, well, let me ask a question about these folks. I understand, we started this part of the discussion in the Book of Enoch. And I understand that what we refer to as fallen angels are not good guys. I understand that. But are you saying that all ETs are these fallen angels?
Well, I have to say that from my paradigm and from what I've embraced, I would say that the phenomenology that is directed and connected to the UFO phenomena is 100% fallen angel activity. That's what I believe. There are others who disagree with me. That's fine. But I believe that all of the phenomena, all aspects of the phenomena, are part of this coming great deception. And when it comes, it will change. When it actually manifests, Kevin, it will change everyone's worldview. Stephen Greer is right. I don't know if you saw the Ancient Aliens program on the History Channel. They interviewed me for 3 hours. I was on for 45 seconds, basically because I wasn't, you know, what I was saying was exactly contradictory to what they were trying to promulgate in that 10-hour series that they did, 5-part series. At the end, Stephen Greer is talking about, with this huge grin on his face, he just can't wait for the day when they show up and all the religions of the world fall and crumble with their own weight. I agree with him. That is what will happen. I call it the coming great deception of a Luciferian endgame. When they manifest, we will see it'll wipe out people's belief systems, people's paradigms, because these so-called extraterrestrials will say that they created all the world's religions, Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, Muhammad, whatever. And now it's time to stop all this nonsense. We'll show you who God really is. And see, again, I'm calling this out a priori, calling it out ahead of time in advance, trying to warn people of what I believe is the coming great deception. We have, from biblical texts, which are thousands of years old, we are told that the fallen one, when he manifests, will come with all signs and lying wonders. All signs and lying wonders. We're also told, I call the Bible, by the way, the guidebook to the supernatural, because that's really, in my opinion, what it is. We're also told that men will be deceived, so much so that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. another place, men fainting from fear from what is coming on the earth, another place, unless those days were shortened, no flesh, no human being would survive. So what is coming is the consequences are dire, extreme, what is coming. And yet we know from that everything will shift at the last minute, and good will come from it. But that's at the end of the 7 years.
All right, let me play, and to use a phrase that perhaps doesn't fit here, but it will communicate. Let me play the devil's advocate for a moment. If all of these ET encounters in the UFO phenomenon, if all of this is attributable to the fallen angels, why have they not already destroyed us years and years and years and centuries ago?
In the book that I'm working on now called The Cosmic Chess Match, we see precisely this. We see move, counter move, move, counter move, move, counter move through thousands of years. And I document this. This is what's so fascinating about what I'm working on. And what we have to understand is that there are points of access between, first of all, in order to understand this, in my opinion, there are three heavens or three dimensions. The first heaven or dimension is Earth. The second heaven is the dimension, basically the entire universe around us, called the second heaven. We don't know how far it goes, and that there's also a dimension within that universe which we don't see. The third heaven is beyond that, okay? And there's right now the war. We know that the fallen one has been booted out, let's say, of the third heaven. He now resides in the second heaven, this other dimension. There are portals, I believe, gates, which allow them access to Earth. Those portals are constantly being warred over and defended. And you say, you know, that sounds crazy, Lynn. How do you know that? Well,
we'll have to wait until we come back from a break to find out how you know. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. We are back. My guests this evening, L.A. Marzulli and Lynn. I had to cut you off in mid-sentence because the break took over. I want to give you the opportunity to finish your thought.
Great. I appreciate that. Basically, we were talking about portals, gates, and there is a proof text that's about 2,600 years old which talks about that. What happens is this guy, Daniel, is offering, he needs some help. So he sends out a request mentally. In other words, some people would call that a prayer. He's sending out a request mentally, okay? He's praying. And 21 days later, an angel shows up. And what's interesting is when the angel shows up, Kevin, and I write about this exclusively in this new book, which hopefully will be out in the fall, but writing about this is phenomenal. The angel appears to this heavenly messenger appears to Daniel. And he's with a bunch of other people. The other people don't see anything, but they're terrified. They hear something. They flee. They're scared out of their wits. Daniel literally does a face plant. He falls flat on his face. Boom. He's absolutely as if dead. The angel walks over to him. It's okay, Dan, get up. Now he's on all fours, right, like a dog. The mm-hmm. angel touches him again. Now he's standing up, but he feels like he's not all there. Finally, the angel goes over and, like, embraces him, sort of, and says, you know, be strengthened, be strengthened. In other words, he's building him up by his words, just by speaking that over him. Daniel regains his strength. Then the angel gives us this insight, one of the few insights that we get into this so-called cosmic chess match, this heavenly battle, which has been going on for literally millennia, literally for centuries. And in that, this messenger tells Daniel, hey, I was dispatched the moment you requested the help. It took me 21 days. I was restrained by the Prince of Persia. I had to go get reinforcements, and I came back, and we battled our way through. Here I am. Now, you sit there and you go, what? It's the only glimpse we get. And there's a lot of conjecture. The first question I would raise is, why didn't the angel just fly around the Prince of Persia? Or, you know, what is preventing him from doing an end run? Why does he have to go back and get reinforcements? It speaks of a portal. And I believe that portal more than likely was Mount Hermon. Could be wrong, but that's where I think it was, which exists today and is a battle zone between Syria, Lebanon, and Israel. It's a battle zone, as above, so below. That's what we see. We see this battle zone in Mount Hermon. There could have been another portal in and around Babylon. Hard to say. You know, I don't know exactly where all these are, but I do know that Mount Hermon is certainly one. We also know from Genesis account in the Book of Enoch that when the fallen angels descended to begin their mischief with the daughters of men, the descent was on Mount Hermon. We also know that the Transfiguration, which Christians know about, more than likely took place on Mount Hermon. So there seems to be a gate there, a portal there, between one dimension and our dimension here. All that to say, you know, these entities come through these gateways, these portals. Blood sacrifice, going back to that, creates openings. In fact, in the History Channel documentary, they were asking me very specifically about the Foo Fighters. And, of course, I told them exactly what I thought, which was completely edited out. And you didn't hear it on the History Channel, but you'll hear it on the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Kevin. We know that the Holocaust killed 6 million Jews and another 6 million non-Jews. So 12 million people were slaughtered in these death camps, and that's what they were. And the bodies of the Jews were stacked like cordwood and burned ritualistically. It was a Luciferian blood ritual sacrifice to open up portals, which is exactly what happened at the end of World War II. What are we seeing? We're seeing the Foo Fighters over the skies of Germany. So, you know, those are some thoughts on that. And this stuff is really, when you start getting into it, we realize that it's alarming in the sense that this war is taking place, continues to take place, and the casualties are in the millions of human beings. I speak of slavery. I speak of the Holocaust, what happened with the gulags in the Soviet Union, the genocide of the American Indian, the genocide of Cambodia, the insane, berserk conduct of not only the Danes in medieval Europe, but certainly look at the what happened in Rwanda in the 90s, the same exact insanity. And this has been going on, and it continues to play out here in this dimension. And so the whole idea, and this might sound a little weird to some of your listeners, but the idea is that these entities and the fallen one, the head of the entities, let's say, wants to be worshipped. It wants to be worshipped and will at some point reconstruct the temple in Jerusalem on what is now the Temple Mount and set himself up in that temple to be worshipped. Christians call that the Antichrist. And that's where it's headed, in my opinion.
All right, now I've got a question or two before we move forward.
Okay.
You gave us an example of Daniel praying and then an angel coming to him. And you talked about what the angel told him, that he had to do battle. But here you have an angel that's not a fallen angel that appears. And regardless of what people think angels are, there's one thing that we can say about whether they're the good guys or the bad guys. They are not from Earth. And that means they are extraterrestrial. Now, some people, when you use the word extraterrestrial, they think of the grays, or they think of the praying mantis type or the reptilian type, and I just consider that to be a personal problem, because extraterrestrial simply means not from here, not from this planet. This is Terra. Extra Terra means apart from, away from Terra. And so these angels, good or bad, are extraterrestrial. Now, you just gave us an example of allegedly a good guy comes to Daniel. He's an extraterrestrial. In that same Bible that you're quoting, we are told that there in the Euphrates River are angels residing under the river now. And we are told that when this thing really gets rocking, they're going to be told, and they're part of the good guy team, they're going to be told to come out of the Euphrates River, and they have tasks that they have to go do. So we have in that collection of books called the Bible, we have both the good guys and the bad guys, and they are both extraterrestrial. So how is planet Earth supposed to know when they look at something that is extraterrestrial, whether it's on the good guy team or the bad guy team?
And that's the $64,000 question, and that's a great question. I believe that, and from this I have coined a phrase from my own experiences in dealing with some of this stuff, rebuke first, ask questions later. In other words, when a person has an encounter, and Butch Bukowski, who doesn't, you know, we have two totally different worldviews, but he knows what he's dealing with in regards to the human mutilation phenomena, which we talked about a little earlier. And Bukowski says the first thing you do if you see a UFO is you get the hell out of there as fast as you possibly can. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we both agree that you rebuke first and ask questions later. Now, if someone, let's say an entity appears in your room at night, and it looks angelic and it looks beautiful, that doesn't mean anything, because the fallen one can appear as an angel of light. So appearances mean nothing. And even what they say in this stage of the game mean nothing. There are a couple of things that human beings can do, but the thing is, thank God they don't manifest because essentially they short-circuit us out. I mean, if you look at people who have had encounters with so-called extraterrestrials, and we agree on that, extra, terra, outside, and I agree with your definition there, and you're right. But they're not from, you know, again, we may disagree on this. I don't know what your paradigm is, you know, totally, what you embrace, what you don't embrace.
I don't believe anything. I look at evidence and let the evidence go where it goes.
There you go, which is a good way. We'll see how all this plays out.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, L.A. Marzulli. Now, for those of you who are joining us just now in the second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you are here. And my most sincere, deep, and abiding sympathy for whatever it is that kept you from being here for the first hour. But we're glad you're here now. We're talking about aliens. We're talking about extraterrestrials. And Lynn is sharing with us from his point of view what these things are. And I had asked the question before we went to break, Lynn, I had asked the question about how do you know which ones are the good guys? And you said rebuke first and ask questions later. And then you had gotten into this train of thought about, you know, if they appear to you in your room at nighttime, and they look wonderful, that doesn't necessarily mean they are. And somewhere in that stream is when the break took over. So let's pick up there.
Okay, great. Look, this might sound, I don't know, you know, this might sound a little odd to some of your listeners who haven't really traveled in some of this stuff. And other people will look at it and it will sound very familiar. I will say this by giving you a very cogent example. In the Alien Interviews book, there's an interview with a man called Lawrence Gray. Lawrence Gray had an encounter with an entity, okay, an extraterrestrial entity, to use your definition of the term, which I also agree with. And this entity was the Mothman. The Mothman manifested in between 1966, 67 in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hundreds of people saw this thing. It was a winged creature. Lots of descriptions similar, some of them vary, height, what the thing looked like. This guy saw this thing manifest in his bedroom at 2:30 in the morning. He was sound asleep. He had a feeling when he returned, actually, let me back up a little bit. When he returned from work that evening, it was dusk, and he had this unnerving presence like there was something in the house. He searched every room, couldn't find anything, had dinner with his wife. They retired for the evening. They're in bed. 2:30 in the morning, he wakes up, which, first of all, according to his testimony, was strange because he's a very sound sleeper. He remembers looking out the window and seeing a car drive by. Then he turned to the foot of the bed, and there is this entity, this winged entity. He was absolutely paralyzed, overcome with fear, unable to move. Which is exactly the same, and I write about this, the good or the bad guys are imbued with certain properties, certain elements that are part of their makeup, which do exactly, we react the same way. Daniel does a face plant, okay, completely gone. And there's other examples of these messengers. Whenever the messengers, the good guys, show up in these ancient manuscripts, the Guidebook of the Supernatural, i.e. the Bible, When the good guys show up, everybody's like terrified. Whoa, what's going on? They're freaked when these things show up. And these are the good guys. This entity, this evil entity shows up. I said, what was it like? You know, describe what this entity was like. He gave me one word, Kevin. He said wickedness. It was wickedness manifested in the room. It was overwhelming. He was paralyzed for about 40 seconds. This guy is a strong Christian belief system, all right? And he knew that the only offensive weapon that he had was to say the blood of Jesus, which is what he did. And he began to say that. And the moment he could get that out, first he did it mentally, and then he was able to do it vocally, the thing began to dissipate and left the room. Now, I spoke to him several years ago. This is decades after the fact. And as he's recounting the story, we stopped and prayed several times because it was so intense. Just even remembering it brings up, drags up the experience, and it's one that's absolutely terrifying, absolutely terrifying. So he was able to get victory over this entity by saying the blood of Jesus. There's another way to test, and we're told this in the Guidebook of the Supernatural, how to test the spirits. You ask, did Yahshua, which is another name for Jesus, come in the flesh? And I'm not talking religion here. People have to understand this. This stuff is all, it's all warfare, which is going on. And if we begin to look at these stories in the context of this cosmic chess match going on, they take on a whole different paradigm than what most people understand. You know, completely different paradigm. And that's why I'm so excited about the book I'm working on. But when you ask that entity, if you can even remember your own name, all right? Look, and I've been involved in exorcisms before, deliverances before, and when you're in the presence of a demonically a demonic manifestation, it's very, very difficult to think. Very difficult to think. And oftentimes, you know, people go into that thinking that, oh well, I'll be, no, baloney. You need to really defend yourself and understand what it is that you're about to come in contact with. And these aren't even fallen angels. These are just the demons. These are disembodied spirits of a Nephilim left over from the flood. But see, that's a whole other can of worms I just opened. But there's another challenge which you say to the entity, did Yahshua or did Jesus come in the flesh? And that sounds sort of like, well, what does that have to do with anything? If you know the warfare, you know that what happened thousands of years ago, when the incarnation did happen, it spelled their doom. It sealed their fate. And they hate that. It drives them absolutely bonkers. So when you say that and you challenge them, you take them off guard, and they'll definitely get ruffled. And I mean that. I mean, they absolutely, some of them will just, oh, well, yes, he came in the flesh, but, and they begin to lie. They won't answer the question. They'll obfuscate it. They'll twist it. It's amazing. And I haven't had a lot of experience in that, but I've had enough to know that it does work. It's just one of the weapons that you can use to test, you know, what you're up against. But the bottom line is rebuke first, ask questions later, because you don't know. And if it happens so quick that you're overwhelmed with the experience. For instance, Ricky Sorrell, who I interviewed for the Alien Interviews book, he was a witness in Stevensville, Texas. The History Channel has interviewed him. Other people have interviewed him. I interviewed him pretty much within days after the encounter. This was a guy that was, one word, overwhelmed. His word, overwhelmed by the experience. And it only lasted like about a minute. And he didn't see any entities. All he did was see a craft that was about probably a mile wide. Completely overwhelmed him. And that's what people need to understand, that when these things do manifest, they are literally overwhelming. And you've got about 2-3 seconds to react. Most people are clueless and they can't react in that 2 or 3 second time frame. And so they're open to the deception or the abduction or whatever else is going on. You got about 2 or 3 seconds to react. That's why the phrase I use in my lectures when I'm speaking live is rebuke first, ask questions later.
Okay. Let me ask this question, and then after you respond to it, we're going to open the telephone lines for our audience so they can join the discussion. If we take that tack, let's say Daniel took that tack, rebuke first, ask questions later. If he had rebuked this good guy extraterrestrial or angel that came to him, wouldn't he be sending away the very help that he had been asking for?
Kevin, I'm having trouble hearing anything at this point. You're so low and so back and garbled that I can't make a thing out. I apologize for that and apologize to your listeners, but
okay, can you hear this? All right. If Daniel had taken the same theory, a rebuke first and ask questions later, had he done that, he would have been sending away the very help he asked for, wouldn't he? Okay, it looks as if we have just lost our guest. All right, so... We will give him another call. When we get him back on the line, we'll get an answer to that question, and then we'll ask you to call in and join the discussion. But what we're going to do right now is get our guest back on the line. Don't go away. We are back, and we have our guest back on the line with us. Can you hear me okay, Lynn? Well, let's see. Hang on a second. Let's push that button. Okay, can you hear me okay, Lynn? Well?
Hello?
Yeah. Lynn, can you hear me?
Kevin?
Folks, I don't know what to tell you. Our phone system is working. You can hear him just fine. But for some reason, he cannot hear me, and I don't know what to tell you. All right, Lynn, we're going to hang up and try it again, okay? And we'll see what happens here. And we'll just have to keep trying until we get him on the line, okay? So we once in a while have these weird things happen with our phones. Okay, and okay, we'll see what happens now.
Hello?
Okay, Lynn, can you hear me?
Oh, there you go. That's good.
Okay. Well, apparently, the other line is defunct. On this end, we could hear you fine.
Okay.
We could hear you just like we hear you right now. But you could not hear me. Is that correct?
That's completely correct. I couldn't. It sounded like you were underwater. This is what I was hearing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for our audience, those of you who receive our K files, you will recall that I explained to you what was happening with the phone systems, that we need to replace a laptop, and that's what's causing that. And that laptop is dead. So we're having to run that phone, that particular phone line, off of one of the broadcast computers, and that's what was causing the problem. So that means then that we're not going to be able to take audience calls tonight. And I regret that, but as soon as we can replace that laptop, then we're good to go. All right. Now, what I was asking is this. Your statement that you should rebuke first, ask questions later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Daniel had followed that, he would have been sending away the very help he had asked for, wouldn't he?
And that's a great point. I think you may have hoisted me on my own petard here, but that's a really good point. And this is precisely and using that example, you've got about 2 or 3 seconds to react. In other words, if let's just look at some of the abduction stuff. They're awake, and they're being taken, and they're completely paralyzed. They look down. They're being floated through walls or whatever. We know that people who have cried out, and Joe Jordan has got like about 300 people that he's actually interviewed and brought out of the phenomena because of this. We know that people who have been able to cry out and say either the blood of Jesus or Jesus have stopped the abduction phenomena. So why Daniel, you know, didn't know exactly what was going on, this might have been his first encounter. He had later on, he gets other ones. And it's different. He's able to, the same angel appears to him. And we see that all the way through all the biblical accounts. Anytime one of these guys show up, people are usually on their faces, just like short circuit completely. The Greys are not fallen angels. So it's slightly different, and people have an opportunity during the abduction to stop it if they want to.
So what are they?
Well, I believe, and again, this gets into the whole warfare thing. A fallen angel is a fallen angel. It's not a demon. A demon is a disembodied spirit of a Nephilim. In other words, thousands of years ago, when the fallen angels manifested on the planet, and we know this from Genesis 6, we know it from Enoch, we also have Greek mythos, which points to this, that they went into the daughters of men and cohabited, had sex with them, and these offspring of a Nephilim. They were giants. They were possibly 20, 25, 30 feet tall. Steve Quayle believes 35 feet. Some of the larger ones, who knows? I believe that they were responsible for building a lot of the ancient megalithic structures that we see throughout the planet. The problem is this, that the flood wiped out the Nephilim, but not the fallen angels. Some of the fallen angels that were involved in this first incursion, we know, were chained. We know that. It's written in the book of Jude. So these angels were chained, but not all the fallen angels were chained. Go figure. Just the 200 are the ones that were involved in the first incursion. Later on, there's a second incursion, and it happens in what's now called Israel. When the chosen people under Moses go into the land, guess who's there? The Nephilim, the sons of Anak. They're like grasshoppers in their sight. We read that from a Jewish historian, Josephus, who writes about that the bones of the Nephilim were openly on display in Jerusalem at the time of the writing, which is the first century. So we know that, this is, we've got, you know, extra-biblical sources, Josephus certainly for one, but there's others that talk about this. I believe that the demons or the disembodied spirits of those giants, those Nephilim, that drowned in the flood. And in order to manifest, this is sort of my own theory, but other researchers who have the same paradigm I do also hold to it, that in order to manifest, the fallen one has constructed some sort of a biological clone, a bio body suit, which this demon can interface with and manifest in this dimension. In other words, when we look at the Greys, they do look clone-like. Their movements are jerky. They don't seem to be in charge. The Mantis or the Reptilian or the Overlord seem to be in charge. The Greys don't seem to be.
So who are the Reptilians and the Mantis?
Well, I believe, and again, this is just a theory, I believe that the Reptilians are what the fallen angels now look like. If you were to strip away the guise, the facade that they're able to create. It says in the guidebook that they're able to appear as an angel of light. So they can shapeshift. They can appear as pretty much whatever they want to appear as. I believe their true form may be, in fact, reptilian. Why? Over the thousands of years, over the millennia, they've sort of grown into that. Why have they grown into that? I can't tell you. I don't know. I have theories on that which may sound a little far-fetched, but those are, again, they're just theories, but that's what I believe.
Well, I guess sort of the underlying aim or goal of the questions that I'm asking is based on, you know, the idea that all of the extraterrestrials are to be feared. And if, you know, you're quoting the Bible, and I have no problem with that, but if we assume that the Bible is the guidebook, if you can't assume that it is the guidebook, then you can assume, for the sake of argument, it is a guidebook. And if we do that, then we have a whole lot of information about appearances of extraterrestrials that were the good guys, and I don't understand why we should in this day assume that all the extraterrestrials are bad guys.
Well, to keep with your definition and what the show has been talking about tonight, I would agree. Certainly, good guys can show up and angelic appearances. I don't believe that they need craft to do that. I believe the good guys are able to manifest in this dimension without the use of craft. But what we see, that some of the glaring difference between the entities, between the good and the fallen, or the good and the bad here, are that the bad guys are always coming in with this whole different paradigm, talking about which I term the alien gospel, which is that the so-called ET created all life on this planet, they started our religions, society, all that, which we talked about in the first hour, which steers away from the Most High God of the Bible. It steers away from what happened on Calvary with Jesus and the blood sacrifice that he did. It obfuscates all that. It leads people away from that. And that, to me, is very deliberate. As I write in the Nephilim trilogy, or the protagonist, I mean, this is fiction, but it's based on, you know, years and years of research. That research later became the nonfiction book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And one of the questions I pose to the reader from the protagonist, Art McKenzie, who's the hero through in all three books, we see his development in all three books. He goes, there's. And this is in the first book, and he's being presented with two schools of thought. One is that these are extraterrestrials from other planets that are here to benefit mankind. The other one is, the other paradigm he can embrace is that these are fallen angels. And he's, at this point, he's a skeptic. He doesn't know what to embrace. But about halfway through the book, he starts to go, well, if they're good, why not just give us the cure to cancer? I mean, why come here and tell us, why come allegedly come here millions of miles to tell us that Jesus wasn't the Son of God? Which I'm not making that stuff up. Abductees often, not all of them obviously, but some have come back and reported that, and they really weird, they were trying to convince me that Jesus wasn't the Son of God, and that it's like, wait a minute, why are they, who cares about that? I mean, why would they even know? You know, why would they even care? Why not give us a cure to cancer? And so it's like...
Well, look, why didn't Jesus give us the cure to cancer?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Why didn't Jesus give us the cure to cancer?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When he was here, he healed everybody of everything.
No, he only healed a few of the people he met. There were many, many people around the world dying of disease minute by minute. And all I'm saying is that I'm not saying he's not the Son of God. I'm saying that the argument that, well, why don't the ETs give us the cure to cancer? We can apply the same thing to, well, why didn't Jesus give us the cure to cancer?
And, you know, that's certainly a good question. I believe at some point when the second coming happens, all that, he actually will give us the cure to cancer, and all diseases we know will cease. Now, that's a statement of faith, but that's what the supernatural guidebook tells us.
Well, you also have this. You said that the good guys don't need machines. They don't need craft to come here. And I would agree, they apparently don't have to have it. And yet, in the guidebook, in the book of Ezekiel, one of the most spectacular UFO sightings ever is recorded. And, in fact, there are two, but one that everyone is familiar with is the wheel in the middle of the wheel. And that was certainly the arrival of the good guys and a message given to Ezekiel. All right, we have to step away for break. I'll give you a chance to respond to that in just a moment. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Okay, welcome back, and I wish I could open the telephone lines for you to call, folks, but I cannot. It's just not working. The system requires two different computers, and as I wrote in the K-Files, the notebook that we were using, the laptop that we were using, died. It's defunct. It's dead, and so we were having to run half of the phone system off of one of the broadcast computers. Sometimes it will work, sometimes it won't, and it is not working tonight. And so I wish I could invite you to be a part, but I cannot. As soon as we can replace that laptop, we can be back in business full scale without those problems. Normally, we get by without it, but tonight it's just not working right. Okay, my guest is L.A. Marzulli, and Lynn, I had just said about the good guys arriving in craft, in the guidebook, in the book of Ezekiel. Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's also... It's used by ufologists continually, and they point to that as being some kind of craft. The movie Knowing, last year, 2009, also depicted erroneously, in my opinion, that what Ezekiel saw was craft. It's not seeing craft. In fact, there's some great Dr. Mike Heiser has a wonderful explanation of that. And what we're looking at, the images that Ezekiel is using is very, very similar and very much what would have been written 2,600 years ago, the imagery that he's trying to describe is. What he's seeing is the dimension between the heavens, which I talked about in the first hour, opening up. That's what he's seeing. He's actually seeing the throne. He's seeing these living creatures, which are, you know, you want to talk supernatural stuff, extraterrestrials. These creatures are unlike anything he's ever seen before. And I understand people say, well, the wheels and the wheel, you know, what does that mean? Many eyes and all this. He's seeing this. It's like he's viewing the throne room, literally. He's getting this view of the throne room in a vision where he's seeing into this other dimension. It's not a nuts and bolts craft, as ufologists, I believe, erroneously would have us believe.
Well, so, prior to Mike Heiser, there was someone by the name of Dr. H. Leo Edelman who was reputed to be and recognized by our government as being the world's authority on the Hebrew language. When the Camp David Peace Accords had to be translated, it was Dr. H. Leo Edelman that translated them. When the State of Israel needed a curriculum in order to teach all arriving, immigrating Jews coming to Israel from other places in the world to teach them Hebrew, it was H. Leo Edelman who wrote the curriculum. And I knew him personally, and I asked him about that, and he said that it is a machine. So there's certainly, and I'm not saying that that Heiser's wrong or that Edelman's right, but there's certainly no agreement amongst the people that are true experts in the Hebrew language.
And you know, and this is the bottom line with that. I would concur. In order for me to really understand where Edelman is coming from, I need to know his worldview and how he actually views. Is he a secular Jew, or is he, you know, a religious Jew?
He's none of those. He was a Southern Baptist pastor with five PhDs.
Okay.
And he was the president of the Southern Baptist Seminary in New Orleans for a number of years. Prior to that, he had been the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Jerusalem. So he's very much in the, Baptists do not admit to being Protestant, and some don't admit to being evangelical, but certainly very conservative theologically.
Uh-huh.
And so he's very much in that vein. And I asked him personally about that, and he said it's some sort of a machine.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's everybody's, look, you're going to get different opinions even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. I certainly respect the man's opinion, and he's entitled to it. I'd respectfully disagree. I don't think it's a machine. We'll have to wait and find out, because I think things are heating up. And
That's something that everybody can agree on.
Things are heating up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see very large craft over the cities of the world at some point, which will be, of course, the coming great deception that I talk about.
Okay, so let's talk about those craft. Why are the bad guys using craft?
Again, here's a theory for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's twofold. And I'm writing about this again in this new book. I'm not trying to plug it, but this new book, The Cosmic Chess Match, has opened up a different paradigm for me when I've observed everything from a strategic, warlike viewpoint. Everything changes. All of a sudden, it's like, oh my gosh, these guys have been going at it for millennia, and it's ramping up towards a final conflict, and we're seeing the stage being set for that final conflict, and it's going to spill over to Earth, just like the guidebook to the supernatural, i.e. the Bible, tells us is going to happen in the latter days. They use craft for two things. One thing, it actually creates a deception. Two things, it enables them to move between this dimension and the second heaven. It enables them to maneuver. They don't have the same abilities that they once had. So the fallen one has figured out a way to get around that, hence the craft. But it's a twofer. Not only can he get around the interdimensional problem by being able to move the craft from the second heaven into this dimension, the first heaven, but he creates the great cosmic ruse, which is what I've been talking about really for almost going on 2 hours now. The idea that
so-called extraterrestrials created, they were our progenitors, created all life on this planet, that they were our progenitors. They started a manipulative DNA. That's the great cosmic ruse that I believe these so-called ETs, you know, friendly ETs, will be promulgating. Most people will believe a lie. Remember what I said earlier, one of the warnings that we receive is that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. So what is coming is off the charts. Here's something else to think about, which ties into what I've been talking about. And again, it's from the Guidebook of the Supernatural, i.e. the Bible. And it says very specifically that in the latter days, end times, the end of the world as we know it, before every history stops and the king returns, but that's another story. But there'll be a one world religious system and a one world government. Well, that sounds crazy. That's written 2,000 years ago. That sounds absolutely absurd. How do you get 1.8 billion, with a B, Muslims, and 2.2 billion Christians to somehow unite, somehow drop their dogma and what they believe and go, okay, when you watch Stephen Greer in the History Channel Ancient Aliens movie, when he talks about the revealing of the extraterrestrial on the planet, he makes my point and does so in a very cogent way. He says that when they show up, all religions will just follow their own way. They'll just crumble. All those institutions. What if they have holographic film, which we hear from the people who are abducted, come back and tell us that they've seen some sort of holographic film of Jesus on the crucifix or Muhammad or whatever. What if they have holographic film of Moses parting the Red Sea, except it's not really Moses parting the Red Sea. We see above him there's a craft that's hidden in the clouds, and the craft is parting the Red Sea. So it's not a miracle. It's just E.T. doing this. Barry Downing Jr. believes and has written about this, that all of the miracles, what we call miracles, are actually generated from UFO beings inside these UFOs flying in the skies. So we're being prepped for it. We're being set up for it. Movies like Knowing, movies like Race to Witch Mountain, District 9, Avatar, the new movie Splice, they all blur what is human, what is not. Where do we come from? Where are our origins? Darwinism basically says, no, there is no God. There's no God. This all just happened by chance, miraculously, over billions of years of time. And yet when Ben Stein sits down with, I think it's Richard Dawkins, at the end of Stein's movie Expelled, here's the premier evolutionist, premier Darwinist on the planet, and says, okay, where did life come from? All he can offer Stein is to say, well, maybe millions of years ago in another galaxy. And at that point, Stein raises his eyebrow, and it's like it becomes self-evident that the argument is really intellectually bankrupt. He has no clue. He has no clue. And frankly, both to say that God created everything ex nihilo, the divine being, is just as valid as saying that millions of years ago in another galaxy, somehow an alien race evolved that created life here. I mean,
I would agree. I do a seminar from time to time. It's called Gods in the Garden. And I make the point that if you believe in evolution or if you believe in creation, either way, it's faith. They are both religious positions.
I agree.
And this is something that a lot of scientists and especially non-scientific evolutionists, just, you know, the run-of-the-mill guy out there that happens to be evolutionist, especially that crowd, really get their back up over the statement that that's religion too. But it is. And because nobody was there, nobody saw it, and you're either going to believe what you read in the Bible, or you're going to believe what you read in Darwin, or you're going to believe what you read in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, when you come to creation, if you have arrived at a conclusion, then you're believing what somebody wrote. And so that's faith. And it doesn't matter which one, it's all faith. You know, I mean,
I concur.
You know,
absolutely.
All right, now we're going to run out of time, and I want to get to some flash messages that did get through to us.
You'll have to have me back.
I will do so. Peter in Columbia says, "Okay, Peter, your first question is about another interview on another show, and I'm not going to get into that." Also, do you think intelligent life exists throughout the universe, or do you think intelligent life exists only on planet Earth?
I realize that many people will scoff at this, and it appears to be a very truncated view. I believe it's only indigenous to this planet. And, okay. And the analogy I'll use is this. If I make a room, if I make a mansion with 200 rooms in it, it doesn't mean I have to populate every room. And it may be sort of a lame analogy, and we realize that the universe is huge and vast, but that's, we know from, again, from the guidebook that something chaotic happened here. Something happened. That God has looked over this thing, and the earth is in chaos, without form, dark, void. Darkness covers the earth, and then he says, let there be light. So, and then he creates something, let's make man in our image, and I realize ufologists twist that and say it's extraterrestrial DNA and all this kind of stuff. But that's what I believe, which again is a statement of faith.
Well, it is extraterrestrial. God is not from here.
Good point.
Okay. And so any way you slice this, you have extraterrestrial involvement. But which extraterrestrial involvement?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this really, some people, just, after I say that, every time I say it, and I've said it many times, I get lots of bad email. but the fact is, just ask yourself a question, is God from here? If he's not from here, he's an extraterrestrial. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, L.A. Marzulli. And there may be some divine providence in the telephone situation this evening because we have really been able to cover a lot more territory than we would have been able to if the telephones had been working where I could invite you to join us. Be that as it may, we are just about out of time. And Lynn, I want to get to some of these flash messages. We'll have to do them real fast.
Sure.
This is from Leonardo in Puerto Rico. Hi, Kevin. Very good show. He wants to know, if religion was an invention of these fallen angels, wouldn't that mean that Jesus was just a plain individual? And if he were a hybrid, that would make him half fallen angel. By the way, Kevin, I want to send you a UFO. Okay. So what would you say to that?
Well, we know that the prophecies are written about his first coming are all over found in the guidebook of the supernatural. Jesus was not a fallen angel hybrid human. That's not what he was. We also know that all of his actions, why here, according to the historical record, which we read, healing people of leprosy, raising people from the dead, feeding 5,000, calming a storm, casting out demons, all incredible benevolent actions. If you had a fever, whatever it was, he healed. And he demonstrated his power over the elements that we know here on Earth. So he was exactly the opposite of what the question poses, in my opinion. He was God come in the flesh as a human. He was both man and God. There's only one person that's ever done that. And the prophecies of his first coming were numerous. The prophecies of his second coming are even more numerous.
And the biggest actual war, fighting with swords, that ever occurred between Christian groups over theology was over the issue. It was Athanasius and can't remember the other guy's name that led the war, and it was over the issue of whether or not he is half man, half God, or if he's all man, all God. Okay.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, behind every war, there is some insane person. Okay, Bob in Australia, question, are these aliens part of Nibiru in 2012, or is that just in the wind and there will be nothing in 2012?
Okay, 2012, is, I will address in the new book I'm working on, The Cosmic Chess Match. In fact, I'm leading up to the 2012. The whole, most of the book is to actually get to the part where we actually can talk about 2012. The Fallen One is very clever. He plans, and I use Blossom Goodchild, I don't know whether you're familiar with her, mm-hmm. but in 2008, in October, several months before October 2008, she was told by the so-called Federation of Light that there would be a manifestation of a 3-mile-wide ship over somewhere in the Western Hemisphere for 72 hours. She blogged about this. She did videos about it. She talked about it incessantly. I got wind of the thing, and I blogged against her. I said, there's no way this is going to happen. These entities lie. They lie habitually. This is not the time. They will not reveal themselves like this. In my opinion, this is not how it's going to come. I was totally 100% right. She was wrong. And then she said, because it's channeled information, she's going, but I asked them numerous times, is this really going to happen? They reassured me that it was. In fact, I have an interview with her, and I asked her point blank, you know, were you deceived? And she won't go to the effect that she was deceived. She won't use those words, but she was certainly let down. She was certainly, you know, let out on a line of dry by herself, flapping in the breeze there, because October 14th came and nothing happened.
Well, there's only two. Only
they lie habitually.
Only two possibilities. Either she was deceived or she lied.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think she lied.
I don't think she lied. She was deceived.
All right. Kevin in Australia wants to know, what are your thoughts on these objects that are around the sun?
I've been looking at them. I think it's very, very interesting. And certainly craft could be, we've got pictures of craft going into volcanoes on the Earth. It's not nearly as hot as the sun, obviously, but just had a little incident here with the dog. Everything's okay. Gotta love live radio, folks.
Mm-hmm.
you know, again, there are signs. We're told in the guidebook of the supernatural, i.e., the Bible, signs in the heavens, men fainting from fear from what is coming on the earth. It's happening in real time. If you know what the prophecies state, you can make heads or sense. Or, you know, heads or tails, make sense of what is happening. If you don't know the prophecies, you're clueless. You have no idea what's going on. I think part of this is leading up to the coming Great Deception. And so we're actually going to see more of these. We're going to see more of these signs until an event happens, which, and I write about this in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, folks, that's sort of the playbook if you want to know what's going on, in my opinion. But it'll happen in the Middle East. There'll be a very incredible war. Nuclear arms will be used. It'll create the most collective fear humankind has ever known. That's the perfect time for the so-called alien extraterrestrial presence to manifest. We're here. We're here to save you, usher you into a new paradigm of peace and love.
Hmm. Okay. We've just got about 5 minutes left here until we have to bring this to a close. You've been doing this long enough to know that there will be part of the audience that agree with virtually everything you said, and part of the audience that will disagree with virtually everything you said. And this, I want to point out, folks, if you're lining up emotionally and you're saying this guy is the greatest thing since sliced bread, or if you're lining up and saying this guy is around the corner and he's never coming back, okay, what you're doing is you're allowing emotion to rule instead of reason. Emotions have their place, and you can't live without them. But it's kind of, I've used this example, emotions are kind of like your children, your little kids. You love your kids, right? And that's why you strap them in when you put them in the car. You don't let them drive. If you let them drive, you will soon be in a wreck. And I've said it many times, if you let your emotions drive, you'll wreck. You got to use your brain, you got to think. And the reason I point this out is, Lynn, you've given us a whole lot of data tonight mm-hmm. for people to take home and think about. And we need to think about it, folks. You have to consider the possibilities. first, if it is true that as above, so on earth, the reverse is true, so on earth, as above. That means there are good people on earth, and there are some excessively wicked people on earth, evil people who want to hurt other people. And so I have said that while I think that the majority of ETs are not looking to hurt us, I think there are some who probably do want to hurt us. And I think it's from their own self-interest. It's not that they hate us so much. That's not the point. The point is we're their pawns in their game, in their war. We're their pawns. And if you don't think ahead of time, you could wind up getting hurt in their game. And I don't think it's necessary to do so. You know, let me wind it up this way. If the guidebook that you're talking about, the Bible, if that's true, it says one-third of the angels rebelled and two-thirds didn't. That means there's more good guys than there are bad guys.
Bingo.
Okay? And so you really don't have to get caught out on this if you think and look at the evidence and don't have a religious experience over this. Now, we're almost out of time. I wish I had more time, but here's what I mean. You can either think or you can be religious. On this issue, you can either think or you can be religious. I think thinking will get you through it. Okay. Lynn, thanks for being with us. Stay on the phone with me for a moment. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to say, my friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.